What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to episode number 638 of the SmartCow Moment Smack Talk Podcast Hot Tags of the Week. We've got a lot to break down here, ranging from gossip and rumors and news and trademarks and current events and TV recaps and title changes and all sorts of different things here. I'm your host, as always, Tony Mango. Joining me, as always, are Robert E. Felice.
Yo.
And Callum Wiggins.
Hello.
Now, of course, we do have a pay-per-view coming up in, around 12 hours
like 14 or so? Hours.
We got the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Go back and check out the predictions for that. We will.
I almost called it One Night Stand. I don't know.
One Night Stand out of all?
Yeah, I don't know why that entered my brain. That's 5 a.m.
I've been listening to the Batista episodes of Something to Wrestle With, and they were just talking about One Night Stand last time that I was listening to that. So maybe that's just going around in the ether right now. We will talk about a match that's been added to that card, though, and any other updates that we have for that. We got, plenty of other things that we're going to get into for all that stuff. So as per usual, we also want to know what you have to say about all these topics and more. So drop your thoughts in the comments section below on YouTube. While you're over there, click on the like button, double check that you are subscribed, and ring that notification bell. That way you get that email alert of when we go live for the post show of the Elimination Chamber breakdown. That's going to be somewhere in the range of 9 to noon, because I don't know how long this event's going to be. And, technically it starts at 5 in the morning for the real main card. The kickoff is going to be at 4, so I guess it pretty much starts at 4, but sometimes they go 4 hours, sometimes 5. Who knows? Maybe we'll still be watching this pay-per-view at 7 o'clock at night or something, for all we know. But, when we do that, you get to do the super chats and take part in the live discussion over there. And if you want to help us out on the monetary side of things, we have a little thanks button on there on YouTube. Helps out quite a bit. Also, click on that join button. Gets you access to the same stuff as the Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/smartcowmoment, you'll see the lineup of the Darkcast tier, the Pick Your Poison tier, and so on and so forth. Two Darkcasts this month. I actually recorded one the other day, just, 3 in the morning or so, where I took the rosters that these two guys had picked for the Elimination Chamber, and I made up my own little cards. I'm going to have to show that to them at some point and get their opinions on what I ended up doing. Also did the Call the Spot for the Elimination Chamber. So if you are a fan of Call the Spot, that's where you can find that. And, if you want to pick up some merchandise, we got Redbubble and TeePublic. We got that for Fanboys Anonymous as well, and for Amango Tees. Eventually, of course, I'm going to switch over to something else whenever I get the time to actually research any of this stuff. So it'll be on Amazon Marketplace or something. I don't know. We'll tell you when that happens. Check around for some other things, though. Join the Discord that we have, where you can have discussions on, wrestling and other things as well. Might be broadcasting something about Elimination Chamber on there for anybody that wants to just watch that live with everybody or something. Haven't quite sorted that out yet, but we'll come back around to that in a little bit later. We got hot tags to talk about in the meantime. And as I said, we do have quite a bit of a variety of hot tags this time around. So I guess one of the things that we could start off with is the Elimination Chamber thing. So with the whole kickoff and all, they don't typically do any matches on there anymore, but they've added a new one. It's going to be the Women's Tag Team Championship match. The Kabuki Warriors, Asuka and Kairi Sane, are defending against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, which is good for multiple different reasons. One means that it's not a full hour of just people talking, which will be very boring to sit through at 4 in the morning. But it also means that Indy's on the card. And that makes it even more confusing to me why Bronson Reed isn't on the card. As far as I'm aware, he hasn't traveled over there where it's like, we saw him traveling over there, but it's going to be like a surprise thing or something. I don't know why they would have just been like, nah, we don't want you there. Nah, we have enough other people we want to highlight and we've got nothing for you. It's a little weird, but I'm glad that Indy gets to compete at least. It's pretty cool, even though she's clearly not going to win those tag titles because that's staying on the Kabuki Warriors. That's my prediction, yeah. At least. What about you guys?
Glad they made the move. I'm glad Indy's on the card. They're not winning.
Yeah, it'll be a match. And the Kabuki Warriors would say.
It will indeed be a match with a winner. And we know who those are.
It will be one of the matches of all time, I say.
So going from that over to spoilers from this episode of SmackDown that hasn't aired yet. For anybody who wants to know, it's really not all that complicated. This wasn't an episode that when I read the spoilers, I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. Like, you know, we used to have back in the day, it was like, what, Jack Swagger cashed in Money in the Bank? This is nuts or something. When they typically do these, it's kind of almost a waste. And it seems like this episode is kind of just one of those things that, hey, they were a match as well, kind of things. Really quickly, just breaking that down for anybody who doesn't want to watch it tonight, skip forward like 60 seconds if you don't want to know the spoilers. But Tiffany Stratton beats Liv Morgan. There's that vignette for Ashanti the Adonis and Cedric Alexander to show them as like a new tag team. Almost called him Cedric the Entertainer right there. I don't know why. That's a different team altogether. Apparently, the Bloodline has several segments throughout the show, none of which anybody's like explained exactly what, so it must not have been all that important. Dante Chen gets squashed by Bron Breakker. Not surprising there. New Catch Republic beats the Judgment Day's Dominic Mysterio and JD McDonagh. AOP beats the Street Profits. Then there's a big brawl afterward where Lashley gets quote-unquote injured with a steel chair from Karrion Kross. So I don't know if that's going to play
that
into
have some interesting ramifications, depending on how injured
it might. But the weird thing is, apparently afterward was then the LA Knight and Drew McIntyre no contest that got everybody involved, including Lashley, that he came out to like fight and be like, yeah, I could still fight everybody for no reason anyway. So it might be an indicator that they want to do some kind of a thing about like, he's not been cleared to compete and we need a replacement.
Indicated that the person who wrote these spoilers misused the word injured.
Well, if they did like a steel chair injury angle thing and he came out with like a sling on or something. So It's like, you know, the level of how injured he's supposed to be might be something that plays into the pay-per-view, or it could just be one of those things where it's like, well, we're going to tape him up because he did just get attacked and it wouldn't make sense for him not to be. And then it really doesn't matter whatsoever because it's 10 hours later and we already have him wrestling in an elimination chamber. Or it could just be their means to explain why he gets eliminated faster or something. I don't know, but doesn't seem like it's the most bombastic episode of SmackDown, which is perfectly fine. I mean, I ain't fucking watching it tonight, so I'll say that.
Rock will be on next week. That's next week. We announced earlier.
Okay, so yeah, so I guess not even the Bloodline segments that they pre-recorded have the Rock on there, which is like, if he's there, he should have probably done something like that. But
yep,
that's just me. I don't know. I tend to grab all my groceries in one bag, so I can every one trip, so I don't have to make multiple trips. And if I have the Rock there, I probably would have filmed a couple more things. But yeah, what am I other than efficient? Let's go to This 2K24 topic here. I wrote up an article about this. You can find it on wrestlingnews.com. Apparently people get super fucking pissed about, which I'm like, yo, relax, you fucking incels or whatever. I wrote up that there at the time that I had written the article, 2K24 had a list of everybody that's in the game on the roster page. And they were missing what I counted to be 70 people that weren't, but should have been listed on there. Now, two of those were pretty obvious that the reason why they're not in there, and that's Vince McMahon and Brock Lesnar. Those were not like, hey, wow, that's weird, because we all knew that that was a thing happening right now with the lawsuit and all. But when I went through the list and I started to break down, you know, who's missing and who makes sense to be missing and who doesn't make any sense, there were some names that were really surprising to me. They've since corrected it for three of those names, but only three, which I think is also interesting. But I'm not going to break down every single person. You could see the list on there. But I had essentially had separation of these roster people by like, all right, this group makes perfect sense. They're not a big enough name. They're pretty new in the NXT system. That's like around 20, 30 people or so. It's about like half the list. It's 26 people. And those are all ones like Izzy Dame and Luca Crucifino, Riley Osborne, even Obafemi. Like, yeah, he's the North American champion, but he's been there for just a few months. That makes sense. that's nothing weird. Ren Sinclair, you know, she's been on like 4 episodes of TV. There's people that have been there a long time, though, that aren't on this. And there are people that are bigger names that aren't on there. Big names that are new signings, again, they make perfect sense, too. Like Akam and Rezar, Andrade, Carlito, CM Punk, Jade Cargill, Lexus King, Naomi, Nia Jax, Kairi Sane. They were brought back into WWE past the point that they had been already working on this game. Again, makes perfect sense. What I don't get, though, is that they didn't have Drew McIntyre, Carl Anderson, and Mark Coffey on there. Those are the 3 that they eventually did add, which then speaks to me as like, oh, some poor intern was just like typing out this list and did it such a half-assed job that the guy didn't even realize 3 names were missing. But they then had a couple others where I'm like, yo, that doesn't make any sense that they're not in here. Dragon Lee's not in here. He's been in the company since December 2022.
He'll be DLC.
Lyra Valkyrie is not in here.
He'll be DLC.
She's the NXT Women's Champion, and she's been a part of NXT UK for like 4 years or something.
Oh, nobody
like,
give a fuck.
But they had people from NXT UK before that, and then she went over to NXT with the merger of NXT and NXT UK, and she's been there for long enough. Like, they have people on here like, let me try to check the list of like the people, like Blair Davenport is in the game, and you've got Fallon Henley, and you've got JC Jane, and you know, people that have been a part of the company after Lyra Valkyria. Nikita Lyons is in the game.
Nikita Lyons is also a regular fixture on NXT TV for a while.
Not as much as Lyra, though.
Not as much now.
No, even before. I mean, Lyra was, she's been in the company for way longer and all, and she's wrestled infinitely more matches and all. Von Wagner isn't in the game.
Yeah, that's weird to me.
I get why Zion Quinn isn't, because he just, hey, he's a free agent and we're never going to see him again. And it's weird that Odyssey Jones is also not in the game for the same sort of reason, but Mako Satomura isn't in the game.
Yeah, but she hasn't appeared in over a year. They probably just didn't feel like scanning her, you know?
Now, the poor schmucks of Boa, Dante Chen, and Guru Raj are like, yeah, because they, like, they're like, oh, if we had the game model from last time around, we still wouldn't put you in the game because you guys are basically just the lowest of the low jobbers on the entire company. But there's still other people that I was like, you know, I'm kind of shocked that like Damon Kemp is in here but Charlie Dempsey isn't. And
Dempsey might be DLC. I have a theory.
What's your theory?
That they'll add him, especially if they can get his dad.
Oh, do like some package deal with those two,
like some father son. Because they're definitely gonna do like Dragon Lee to me. That is very weird. He's got to be DLC. Lyra, that is very weird. She'll probably be DLC. Because unfortunately, what they do with DLC, they don't do, and I even have to give AEW credit for this, where it's like, okay, they're a new system. They're going to add these people in slowly. WWE and rather 2K and these big companies, they just deliver these games half complete in mind because they already have their DLC packages sorted out in their mind. So it's like, oh, this is our NXT the future pack. It's Dragon Lee, Lyra, Obafemi, Charlie Dempsey with William Regal and your name, Ren Sinclair.
Like, you know? Von Wagner still don't they?
Yeah. Know, yeah, like Von Wagner.
I mean, there's a lot of other NXT people that to each their own, like you would think that I would have thought that Valentina Ferrois would probably be in there because she's been around long enough. But then again, they don't really seem to give a shit. Electra Lopez isn't in the game.
She might be a DLC. I could see her getting that like late stage scanning. Valentina Ferrois, you're giving them too much credit. Because realistically, even though they have 200 names in the game, it's also a lot of retread, and it's Triple H and Triple H 2002. Ha ha ha. You know, and
yeah,
there are still so many people that just aren't worth putting in. I'm sorry to say it like that. I know it sounds mean.
No, it's the truth, like, though, but it's weird that like Scripps is in the game.
No, it's not. He should be. I would have been. I don't normally defend Scripps, but I would have been pretty shocked if Scripps was in the game. He's been. He was the build to WrestleMania 36 there. He should be in every game by this point. He's been there for a while.
Yeah, like they have Scripps in the game, but they don't have, for instance, the three other members of Metaphor, Lash Legend, Jakar Jackson, and Ora Mensa. Lilla Vice isn't in the game. You know, it's just it's a wide variety of people. Javier Bernal is not in the game, etc. So I do think it's interesting that in particular, the what names that stand out to me the most are Von Wagner, Lyra Valkyria, and Dragon Lee, because I don't see any reason why those shouldn't be in the game. So
Wagner's gotten enough airtime since the start of 2.0 that he should be in.
Yeah.
Dragon Lee, I think that's got to be a lock for DLC.
Now, I haven't
probably a lock for DLC.
I haven't double checked to see again if maybe there is a little bit of a they decided to fix the list, but nope, no three are not on the list still. So,
you have to remember, I understand your point about Lyra, but she's like before she beat Becky Lynch, we were all thinking, oh, Becky Lynch is gonna run right through her, you know. Now it feels like she's a big enough deal. But you know, you brushed over the Lesnar thing. That is shocking to me, quite frankly.
Well, he's in the game. They're just locking him.
I don't think they're locking him. I think like his movement, like I don't think they're doing a permanent erasure of his moveset like they did with Benoit in 2007. But I think he's just not going to be playable, which is shocking to me because surely he's in the like showcase mode and you're not. Are you really just going to just wipe that stuff clean? I mean, did you think they took Vince out of the game completely as well? That's got to be a little tough for your WrestleMania mode there. I mean, again, good on them for specifically the Vince stuff. But I just thought Lesnar would have made the cut, given that he's, again, not directly named, even though there is no one else that could fit the description. It's just shocking that they're like, yep, Lesnar gone. Like, they're ahead of the game, depending on what they think is going to come out next.
Which does kind of make you go, what else is going to come out next? Yeah, that's obviously not going to be factoring into me not buying the game, because I wasn't going to buy it anyway. But there's some people out there that are upset in particular about the omission of Dragon Lee. I saw that was like the main one that people were like, yeah, what do you mean Dragon Lee's not in this game? Come on, man. So some people out there might be willing to wait for some DLC pack or something. And yeah, I'd like to hear the explanation for why those people aren't necessarily in the game yet. If anybody ever gets to like interview those people and just be like, yo, what are you doing missing these people? Plenty of other hot tags to get into now. You guys want to toss out whichever one of them you want to go to next?
Let's go through. Talk about AEW a little bit. So, first of all, Tony Khan has officially announced that next Wednesday's Dynamite in Huntsville will be Sting's last appearance on TBS as a wrestler, which is, I mean, for God's sake, he's in his 60s. And I have to let go, but it's still sad to think about because Sting's the fucking man, and that breaks my heart, you know? You think, Callum, are you ready to say goodbye to the Stinger?
I mean, I've probably kind of been ready since TNA, probably.
since WCW ended.
yeah, not that this hasn't been fun, because it has been a lot of fun, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I assumed it would have. It did happen about 3 or 4 years ago. He retired, and then he came back. So,
yeah. I guess it's true.
It'll be a cool moment, but it won't match what's going to happen at Revolution, probably. So,
Now, we will talk, of course, about some more detailed Revolution stuff next week when we get into our predictions and all, but you guys thinking that they're going to do the Ric Flair turn?
I think they're doing the Ric Flair turn.
That they're just teasing it for the sake of not doing it?
Yeah, I think that the idea is going to be that he's with the Young Bucks because they understand them, and then in Greensboro, he will very much help.
I mean, I'd rather he just turned on Sting, because the crowd aren't going to cheer him if he helps Sting, because everyone hates Ric Flair. So
it's like boo, you're going to turn on Sting. No, I'm not. Boo, you're still here.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's I know this is Sting's request to have Flair involved, but it's just muddying all these waters because the crowd's not really going to know how to. They just want to fully embrace that Sting is retiring and giving the best celebration possible, but then there's this ghoul in the corner who's just casting a very dark shadow over everything, because whatever his involvement is in Sting's final match, he's not going to get a great reaction from the audience. But admittedly, it's in the Greensboro Coliseum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is the one place in all of America that will cheer Ric Flair.
Yeah, I can't see them doing the he turns, because what benefit do you get out of that? Send him off with Sting and then because send him off with Sting.
Because the whole story of Sting's career is, when is Ric Flair going to turn on him?
Right, but that's why you do the opposite this time.
No, you end it the way that it always was. You can't end it with Flair siding with Sting this time. It must be the Sting overcomes Flair again. Because what's the story then? It's the case of Sting, Flair helps Sting, but they still lose to the Bucks.
Are you currently going with that they're probably going to lose?
I'm still like in two minds about the whole thing.
The only way I see if they lose, the only way I accept that is the Young Bucks then have to get Flair on the next show. Like, I do not want to see Flair beyond this.
Oh yeah, well, I want Flair gone. But realistically, I mean, there's one of two ways you can do that. You could have the turn as you were saying, and that Bucks just super kick Flair out of the ring, get the big babyface pop of the night.
And Flair is like, see, I can do it. I can wrestle another match. I took a double super kick, and then he bleeds.
Yeah. But
he can at least do a vertical suplex from Andrade into a pool. I saw that video.
Yeah. Or Flair does just go with the turn, and Sting just puts him in the Scorpion for a couple of seconds before getting super kicked in the face. So, I mean, as I say, it's just adding a unnecessary layer of it's not intrigue, it's just an extra layer that you don't really need, because this feud is already so personal and they've built up enough animosity with the attack of Sting and Darby and Sting's kids off. They won the tag titles, and you now add in a layer of Sting's father passing away last week and
him
obviously that's condolences to Sting and their whole family, but him using that as fuel for that most recent promo on the most recent episode of Dynamite, like, that surely that's enough emotion into it. You don't need to have Flair involved, but Sting wants Flair involved, so what can you do?
I thought it was really lame that he just shows up and's like, I'm mad because I haven't been around. Like, all right.
Yes, Sting's retirement's supposed to be all about me.
Yeah, really? Like, fuck.
What's funny even more about that, though, is like how much truth that there most likely is on that. Because I can totally picture that being the case where if they, like, out of character interview Flair, and then he's just like, yeah, it was really good that I could be there, but, you know, I think I should have done more. I think that the angle could have been a lot better if I would have done more. It would have been better if it was more me. Like,
you know, he eventually will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to what I've seen from like coming out of the Wrestling Observer, and this is the first time, and maybe long time going forward, that I will say you have to put a grain of salt into this, because those guys have been fucking things up left and right recently.
Oh my god! Yeah.
You think there's a reason for that, by the way?
I think they're just getting...
They're getting really bad information, like, on purpose?
Yeah. Maybe not intentionally, because, like, other people... I would say at this point, there's no real point of giving them dud information, because, like, why aren't you giving dud information to people like Fightful, who are, like, kind of more up-and-coming? But maybe Fightful are getting dud information sometimes, but...
somebody has... And a disclaimer, I don't know.
I think
maybe
they've got...
somebody has a better BS detector?
And I think there's some also case of maybe they've had sources that have been there for a long time and people know who those sources are and they're feeding them the wrong stuff.
Could be.
But one way or another. Or he's just immediately trying to get news out, and that means he's not doing due diligence. But one way or another. But they essentially said that Flair has been dealing with his own personal issues in the last month or so, and that's why he's not been on TV involved in this story.
So, personal issues, like anything in particular?
They didn't say anything specifically. In the same way that, well, I guess we can lean into this, so, and no, we're not going to do like full on TV talk, but since we're talking about that and the Builds Revolution, so the biggest story coming out of Dynamite was the supposed injury to Hangman Page.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone assumed that he'd suffered an ankle injury after he essentially slipped off of Samoa Joe in the Muscle Buster and seemed like he'd injured his ankle, rolled to the outside, told the cameraman to stop filming him, limped out after the show was over, and then that was reported by a Wrestling Observer saying that they thought that he might have suffered a broken ankle, and then that was shortly after debunked by Fightful and John Rossap saying that the injury was just a work, and then that was then... Brian Alvarez came on to obviously rebuke their initial claim, but then saying what the reason was for that injury was that the injury angle was that Hangman Page is dealing with his own personal issues. Again, not going into specifics what they are, because that's not really relevant one way or the other, but essentially they're using that potential injury angle as a potential out of getting him out of the match at Revolution if he thinks that he cannot compete in it for some reason.
So, the thing that struck me, and this is why I had mentioned the idea that maybe certain people have a better BS detector, because when Sean did report, yeah, Hangman's fine, or at least versus within AEW say Hangman's fine, you had Jerry Lynn tweet Sean, like, why is this even getting out? God forbid there's a hook going into next week's show, and it's like, because people were legitimately concerned that the man had an ankle injury and wasn't going to be at the show.
Mm-hmm.
And look, nobody wishes that like wrestling was a little more blurred lines than me, but people do not care anymore that the show is fake. You know what I mean? The people who are going to watch you definitely do not care if you're doing an ankle injury. They'll play along. They want to make sure that Hangman's going to be at the show. You know?
Especially if they're going to the show. Or if they're watching it.
Especially if they're going to the show.
You know, if they might be like, oh man, without him in the match, I'm not interested in there. And then,
Yeah. But the main thing of coming out of this injury angle is that we still don't know whether he's going to be at the show or not.
Right.
Is the fact that, like, even though we know that he's not injured, we don't know whether his situation, whatever that may be, will allow him to be at the show. So either they play into it. Now that they've had that thing happen, they'll have to play into it one way or another. But whether it's a case of they play into it to the point where they just turn it into Samoa Joe versus Swerve Strickland, or that they play into it and then he just is selling an ankle injury during the match. That's essentially the two routes they're going to go down now. And I mean, at the end of the day, even though it would be disappointing to lose Hangman from the match, obviously whatever is happening in his own life is much more important than anything else, a wrestling match. But I think that Revolution at least is a good time to do it, if that's the case, because we know the main event of that show is the tag title match, pretty much. So, and that's the big match that everyone's going to really be going for, and the one that they're going to try and we're going to remember and make the biggest deal out of. So if the world title has to suffer a little bit, it's not ideal. It's definitely not ideal, but it's not the end of the world. And Joe versus Swerve would still be a great match.
So another AEW topic to talk about, the trademark of Dynasty.
Yes.
Not so, my favorite sounding name. It's a little bland to me. That's AEW just a pay-per-view, you know.
Yeah, that they've trademarked it for a show. That could always be a weekly show, like a Collision. But I personally think it's going to be a pay-per-view. And I personally think, given the schedule that we already know, that looks like an April pay-per-view to me, or a July pay-per-view. Because we already know that May is taken by Double or Nothing, and June is taken by Forbidden Door. I'm all for it, because we have known for a while that they were going to keep adding pay-per-views, so I'm okay with it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced one way or the other what the name would be attached to, because as soon as I see AEW trademark something, I just usually assume it's some kind of mobile game. okay. But yeah, we'll see what it ends up being. I agree with Tony, and I'm not usually always in 100% agreement about Tony's opinion on wrestling pay-per-view names.
Right, yeah, because you're usually just like, yeah, it's a name, who cares?
Yeah, but I don't think that Dynasty is a particularly strong name, unless they're doing some sort of crossover with that former CW show.
And Dynasty is an iconic show just in history in general, and that would be an amazing crossover, but something tells me probably not going to get that.
To me, I'm not a fan of like a lot of those names where it's just sort of a name that already means something else, and you're just kind of slapping it on there. Like, I mean, I, a lot of people probably would consider this like blasphemy, but I never liked WWE Armageddon. I never liked Vengeance. Like, I think Vengeance Day is much better than Vengeance. And, yeah, Dynasty just sounds like it's like, okay, they Googled, there's a website that's, I don't know if they still have the same thing anymore, but it's like specifically related words that aren't necessarily synonyms, and you can just Google something like championship and it'll come up like triumphant and awards and whatever, like anything that could be related to that word. It kind of feels like they were just like, oh, go for like esteem, and then they're like dynasty, sure, we'll do that too, and like the Wrestle Dream name and some of the other ones.
When I was trying to think of Wrestle
Dream. Yeah, like it's kind of just blah to me. So I'm not a big fan of that. If that's going to be like AEW Dynasty is coming up, I'll be like, yeah, it's just another pay-per-view name. It's not going to make me more excited. If anything, it makes me a little less excited.
Had Wrestle Dynasty at the Garden, didn't they? Wasn't that the name of the Madison Square Garden show?
I can't remember if that was the name of that one. It was a good show. It was somewhat cursed, so it hasn't retained in my memory.
Do you think that could be the reason why? Is that he's just like, let me try to take all those names and repurpose them?
Yeah, maybe, because it's a good name, and I think, it's not like the best pay-per-view name ever or anything, but like, it's fine, and I'd like to see them expand. You know, one thing that, continuing on the trend of talking about AEW here that we need to talk about, they hired Jen Pepperman from WWE to be the vice president of content. And I think that shows you're looking to add more content. You're looking to get an established name that's worked with, you know, names like Sasha Banks. Eric Bischoff was praising her. She's well-liked in the industry, and I think, like, AEW seems like they're getting out of the OG feel of it, but getting more into the, okay, we're establishing infrastructure.
No idea what she's responsible for, good or bad, so I can't really say.
No, like, that was the one thing that was annoying me, was people were like, yes, you know, all right, we're getting women in positions of power, and I'm just going, That's awesome. Can anyone tell me what she's like? Is there a specific storyline that we can tie to her so we know what she brings to the table?
Yeah. Are you getting excited just because she happens to be a female, or because you think she's actually going to do good work? So she could be responsible for the 24/7 championship, for all we know.
Well, we know that apparently she's very close with Mercedes. So one of the rumors being...
She's done nothing for the past 2 years.
Is that she's, you know, she's worked well with Sasha. So perhaps there's something there. But I just want to know more of, like, who can we attribute these storylines to? And for the record, I want to know that across the board. I'd like to know more about the people who are actually putting stuff together, so that you're not just going, Triple H good, Triple H bad, Tony Khan good, Tony Khan bad. Like, I'd like to know more about these other people. They have a whole staff.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit weird if they did some kind of like, you know, at the end of each segment, they have like written by, and then it says the names.
But WCW did that.
Did they used to do that?
After every pay-per-view show, yep, they ran a credit.
Yeah. They ran full credits.
I'd never paid attention to that.
By the way, WWE used to do that too when they ran like either their closed circuit shows or like, I know the Slammies had like actual credits, and that's where the clip of the famous directed by kayfabe comes from.
If you go on SmartCat Moment and you ever see anything that's written by kayfabe Mark Jobber, yeah, it's a sponsored post.
I'm excited about that signing, joining a growing creative team of like Danielson and Hero and Will Washington and Jimmy Jacobs. And again, I want to know more about the inner workings of stuff like this. That stuff is just as much part of the magic. And the only people who ever seem to talk about it are freaking Russo. Yeah, I want to hear more creative process stories than just, bro, it was me and Ed Ferrara and we just wrote everything and I'm the best. Like, I'm very inspired by those kinds of things. But maybe that's just me, because I'm like, this happens to be my particular area of nerddom.
It would be kind of interesting, though, if they did that for, like, every segment. Like, it's like, all right, there goes, at the end of, like, the Orange Cassidy getting saved by Jack Swagger. That'd be kind of funny. It's obviously never, ever going to happen, but, yeah, that just kind of tickles me a little bit.
And the last thing from AEW that isn't TV-related is Andrew Zarian of the Batman podcast reporting they're going to run Forbidden Door in Queens at Arthur Ashe.
Yeah, we still don't have a date yet, but it should be sometime in June, which means I might end up going.
I will say that I'm actively, as long as money provides, I think I might want to go.
Oh, you know where you're staying if that's the case.
That is fair.
That's great for you guys. Admittedly, I'm going to Wembley Stadium for the second year in a row.
Hey, if you want to fucking come to New York, you know where you're staying too. Save you some money.
I think I'm already going on vacation in June anyway. So
are you really?
Not in the UK still. It's not anywhere exciting. But it sounds like they obviously have a history of Arthur Ashe with the Grand Slam stuff. So it seems like a good place to potentially sell out, or at least get a big crowd for a show.
And they've gotten enough positive stuff with Arthur Ashe that they know that they're not like running a risk here about, you know, the way that a lot of their shows have to be like taped off and, you know, not filling in a whole thing. Like, they should be fine for that. Pay-per-views do better than the TV shows and stuff too. So depending on the pricing and stuff, I might end up going there. Like I said,
Darian also said they're still going to run Grand Slam in Queens, and it would just be potentially, he deleted the tweet after saying it was too early to say, potentially in Louis Armstrong Stadium. I would like to see them shoot for the Garden. I really, like, I think AEW is a big enough deal I think they can run the guard. Freaking Ring of Honor ran the guard. AAA ran the guard. You know, like, I'd like to see AEW host a show at Madison Square.
Well, that's another hot tag, though, the Arthur Ashe thing, so stay tuned for that. Let's talk about this is a real quick mention. I don't think we need to get into this because none of us follow it, but if you're a fan of Summer Rae, Danielle Monáe is going to be the interviewer for the BYB bare knuckle boxing thing, so go ahead and check her out. Cool.
Someone friends with Salad? What?
NWA has announced that they are going to actually have that CW deal that had been going around for a little while, and then it seemed like it could have been potentially pulled. Well, no, it is happening. Now, I didn't read the detailed report about the whole thing yet. I kind of saw that right before we got started, but Rob, you said that they are on the app and that they are going to have the reality show that they had been pitching before.
So this, so first of all, the press release came out on February 21st, and it announced that Billy Corgan was announcing a new streaming deal for the NWA with the CW. Under this newly minted all-encompassing partnership, NWA programs will be streaming and on-demand via the CW platform and portal in the United States. My issue with this, guys, is that NWA has been on the CW app all month. I don't know why they waited 3 weeks to be like, and by the way, yes, we are on the CW app. Because I've been covering the show the last 3 weeks on the app. But the important thing here is, additionally, there will be an unscripted, untitled series about Billy Corgan's life as president of the NWA. And that will debut later on the CW, presumably on the app as well. But maybe that one makes it to TV. I tweeted out when I watched the first NWA Power on this CW app that they had a match between Cardona and EC3. It was a death match for the NWA world title. And I had said that, like, if this was under any other umbrella, MLW, TNA, whatever, even, you know, House of Glory or GCW, gotten more press than if it was just on the NWA, because unfortunately the brand identity is so low. You know, like, nobody's interested in this promotion. I think we're going to get into the Observer Awards later, and you'll see where that ranks. But, like, it's a decent idea, and I'm always for more wrestlers getting opportunities, but they have zero buzz, and that's so frustrating.
I think I had seen a grand total of, like, 4 episodes of NWA Power when they first started airing, because I was like, I'm going to give them a shot. You know, it's not my deal too much, but at the same time, maybe it could be.
And not for nothing, but let's talk about those first episodes of Power. Nick Aldis is working for WWE. Mm-hmm. Ricky Starks is working for AEW. Eli Drake went on to become, like, surprisingly the biggest babyface, or one of them, for WWE with LA Knight. And Wade Barrett, who's calling the show, is also working for WWE. So they were onto something in the very beginning, and much like a lot of other things, just poor decisions, hiring and otherwise, and the pandemic just shit and all over any of the momentum they had. And it's fortunate for the roster of, like, the younger names that are trying to make it, because I'm not going to sit here and say, oh man, you need to be where wrestling is in 2024, you need to see Trevor Murdoch team with Mike Knox. This is what you need in your life right now.
You don't need to see Trevor Murdoch at all.
But, like, if you go back to, we did the women's fantasy mock draft, I was drafting, you know, Pretty Empowered and all these NWA women's factions. And I think if they can tap into something that's more youth-based, it'd be a lot more fun to watch.
I have zero plans on watching this new, the CW setup for NWA, but it's good for them. Let's talk about TNA. Let's talk about those hourglass emojis.
Yeah.
What's happening there? Is that just very much everybody going, well, Scott D'Amore's out, so I can't wait until I'm out of my contract? Or do you think that there's something else going on? I saw one thing that I laughed at where somebody's like, man, all these people are going to feud with Karrion Kross.
Well, then we can get into that too. But after what Sean Ross Sapp tweeted out, that he was going to have information in regards to a big TNA star having their contract up soon. And then Josh Alexander tweeted the emoji. And then sites ran with that. And then everybody else tweeted the emoji. Because it's just like, it's, I don't know if they were just fucking people or what, but then we find out later that they, TNA does pick up Josh Alexander's contract year. And from Sean Ross Sapp again, we find out he had requested them not to do this. And they did it anyway. So it doesn't feel like the new TNA under Anthem's reign is off to a hot start. It actually feels very more, much more on brand for TNA than we could have imagined. But I think it's unfortunate if there are that many people right now that aren't feeling being in TNA, because there was just so much brand pride in that roster like a month ago.
Yeah, just a few weeks back, it's a completely different story. Well, it was, who had tweeted out the Hourglass things? It was Josh Alexander, Jordan Grace. I'm blanking on the other ones. There was like three other ones, right?
I know Grace did, because Kross was like, are we just stealing trademarks now? And she replied back, bro, trademarked an emoji. That's crazy.
Tommy Dreamer was one. Speedball, Mike Bailey, Masha Slamovich. Might have been just those.
Chris Bay as well.
Oh, Chris Bay is another one that's not on this list.
Great, he needs to. He could split. They got a lot of talented people there. That's the thing. It's like kind of like NWA, where you just go, shit, you're all so talented. It'd be great if the brand you're in had buzz around it, you know? Because unfortunately right now, again, all the buzz about TNA is, so they already did the TNA thing, didn't they?
Oh, do you guys think that these people are going to be heading out as soon as possible? Or if you do, where are they going to go? Or think it's just kind of them messing around?
Well, Alexander's got another year at least.
Unless they do some kind of thing where they agree to be out of the contract.
And he's kind of already said, yeah, we'll see where the next year goes, and then I'll be a free agent. So he's got another year. I'd love to see Jordan Grace. Now that I saw her in the Rumble and saw that she held her own very well, I'd love to see her get a shot in WWE. Moose is stuck for five. Didn't say stuck. He's actually doing pretty well. Moose is there for 5 years. Speedball can always kill it on the independents. Asha, same thing. So it's kind of the people I'd pay attention to are Bay, Ace Austin, Alexander, and Grace, because they can probably get a lot of options and will want to move up in their career.
When does Jordan Grace's contract end? Do you know offhand?
I don't know.
Because she's like, out of all of them, the one that I would be like, okay, can she just go to WWE and just, you know.
Remember, she was a free agent briefly. And
then she decided to resign, right?
Yeah, I was so excited because I was like, oh, good. It's time for her to move up. And then she chose to stay. And I get it. I get wanting to help build TNA, but like, man, you got to take that chance on yourself. Okay, so it's a 2-year deal, according to Fightful. She's there until at least 25.
Wonder how much she her deal is for, like if they would be able to buy her out, if they'd be interested in that. They should. You should just do it. Fuck it. You got enough money, WWE. Come on.
Well, it depends on if they take the buyout.
Offer them some extra money on top of it. They'll take it. Be like, we'll give you 20 extra bucks. Yeah, so that's something to pay attention to. Those hourglass emojis might end up being something that we talk about in a future episode of the hot tags, just being like, yeah, look at that. Okay, these people, whatever. Tommy Dreamer was an interesting one for me, because Tommy Dreamer's like
in a fucking,
yeah, it seems a little weird
being Tommy Dreamer.
Let's talk about some IWGP stuff. Some Global Heavyweight Championship changed hands. The New Japan World Television Championship changed hands. Nick Nemeth and Matt Riddle winning those belts after coming in at Wrestle Kingdom and making a little bit of a stir there. Pro con, what are you guys thinking?
Callum, I'll let you start here because you probably have more to say.
Yeah, this is bad. and it's not Nick Nemeth. It's certainly not Nick Nemeth. Nick Nemeth is the least of our problems here. I think he's totally fine too. Well, I say there's still an issue with that one, but it's a different issue. It's more the show in general and the stark reality that's now creeping into everybody's mindset now is that, yeah, Gedo and everyone that's doing the creative for New Japan need to go. Like, ASAP. It's not even those two matches, even though they're the biggest for more Western audiences. Just go back to the previous two matches where you had show of House of Torture defeating El Desperado to win the junior heavyweight title, which means even more House of Torture bullshit. And then it followed up with even more House of Torture bullshit with Evil defeating Shota Umino to retain his never openweight championship, which were just, you know, they're the same matches. It's just constant interference and bullshit and around ringside. Then you move into Riddle defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi for the television title, which I think went about 8 minutes. And, you know, Riddle's problematic, but he's not Japan problematic. So he can get away with doing this thing in the same way you've had your Michael Elgin's in the past spend time in Japan when he couldn't get work in the US. And, I mean, Riddle could still find work on the US scene, because seemingly anybody who's, anybody is available if the offer is right enough, as one Mr. Velveteen Dream found out earlier.
That's right.
Week as well. Oh, God, you want to talk about that a little bit?
we'll talk about that afterwards, but this one, it's just, Riddle is, you know, he's a good wrestler, but I don't see what the long-term value of him holding the television championship is for New Japan. I don't think people are going to be really switching over because Matt Riddle is a champion in New Japan Pro Wrestling now. And you can argue the same thing about Nick Nemeth winning the title, but at least with Nick Nemeth, he looks like, or he's given all the impression that he's very, like, passionate about this, and that he's very devoted to being part of New Japan, as well as the stuff that he's doing with TNA and other stuff in the independent. He's sent all the right signals that him leaving WWE is not there to just, like, pick up paychecks from and not do anything in other promotions, just to coast by on the bare minimum and his name value. He's actually, like, working hard and doing some good stuff. And so I don't have an issue with him winning the Global Heavyweight Championship for his own quality. It's more about the fact that he defeated David Finlay, and as people would know, I'm not a big fan of David Finlay and his push with the Bullet Club. He's been pushed well above his station. But last week, we talked about how Will Ospreay in his final New Japan match in that giant 10-man steel cage match essentially sacrificed himself to put David Finlay over, and he put David Finlay over twice in the last, like, couple of months or so, but with him taking the fall from Finlay at Wrestle Kingdom and then taking the fall for him in that match last week. And then in David Finlay's first ever defense of that global title, he just immediately loses to the next Western guy that he gets to come over to the company. And yeah, I just don't know what sort of signals you're giving that. It's like, are you trying to build this guy up, or are you actually just going to hand it out to the very next guy that comes in that you think might get you some more US subscribers for New Japan World? I just think the whole philosophy and the whole creative direction of New Japan, with their real hesitancy to push some of their new young top names to the top of the card, I mean, fucking, I mentioned that Evil defeat in Showroom, and you know, Showroom is supposed to be like, well, in many people's eyes, is the next big name for New Japan Pro Wrestling, but he just gets beaten and beaten and beaten by established names over and over and over again. And then Hiroshi Tanahashi, rather than losing the losing that television title to an up and coming name, because that's what the TV title was meant to represent when it was first developed, just loses it to a guy that's coming in for his first match who has issues, let's say. And then Finlay, who they've tried to protect, and Will Ospreay did his absolute utmost to put this guy over on his way out, then immediately just drops his newly won title to a new guy coming in. It's just, yeah. So I think that the creative in New Japan right now is in a real bad state, and they need a serious refresh in that department. But I just don't think that that's coming, because I don't know who they would bring in to replace him.
Do you think that with the House of Torture stuff, that they are trying to be like, can we make this our bloodline?
No, because they're not giving them proper serious titles. The Never Openweight title is like a tertiary title at best. The Junior Heavyweight title is, you know, I mean, it's significant when you've got a significant person holding it. When you've got show holding it, then it's not going to be worth anything. It's not like all this stuff about the people coming in, like new faces coming in and immediately giving them titles and pushing acts like the House of Torture as the big things and the Bullet Club War Dogs, even though I like the War Dogs in general, but pushing those to the top, and then your Chorominos and Yotsujis and Yuya Umoras are just like stuck treading water, doing absolutely nothing of real value. When they should be, as I say, I'm not saying that those people will ever reach the heights of someone like an Okada or a Naito or a Tanahashi, but you've got to give them the chance to. You've got to give them the chance to at least be those top stars that everyone thinks they have the potential to be. And they're just so slow, and they're so tepid, and it's so predictable, and it's boring, and it's stale, and everything about New Japan right now is just so, ugh. It's a pretty desperate situation for, at least from my perspective as fandom. And I know there are some people that will say, like, oh, the House of Torture get big reactions in Japan. Well, I don't care. They suck. Get them off TV.
I like that you're consistent, though. You would say that about WWE Act, and you're saying it about New Japan Act.
Yeah, well, it's always the thing where I try and balance out the fact that all this stuff is just my own opinion. Where it's a case of, like, I can understand if there is a monetary value, or there is, or most people like it. As I say, like, I'm not the biggest fan of the Toni Storm gimmick, but I can understand that most people like it, so I can understand why they keep pushing her on TV.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I can kind of, even if I can understand that there might be more interest from the domestic audience than my own fandom for the House of Torture, I still think they should get rid of it, because it's just fucking annoying. So I'm sure, like, how can people just keep enjoying seeing the same finish to every match? It's like the NWO back in, like, 98, 99, where everyone was just seeing, like, you weren't actually watching whatever match was taking place. You were just waiting for the person to run in to cause a DQ or to, like, fuck up with the ref, because I don't know who can find that entertaining, but if some people do, more power to them. But
it's all the more reason why I hate the whole, like, I think that they had something really great going on with Roman, and then they just decided, well, we can't do anything other than that. And then it's like, man, he could have had a really amazing 3-year run of, like, actually just winning these matches. Like, you know, why does he have to win every match by Solo or Jimmy or, you know, some kind of BS like that, where it's just like, man, every single fucking time. So now it is pretty much just like, you wait until the interference, and then that's the end of it. And
yeah,
it's even going to take away from, like, the Cody thing. Is like, all right, I'm just not going to be able to enjoy that match at Mania, because I know that at some point there's going to be interference, and then that's going to be the dictating point of, is that the end of the match, like it always is, or is that the one time that they're going to offset it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just, it comes down to every professional wrestling promoter or booker has a shelf life. And Ghetto's has done some excellent work over the last 10, 15 years or so since he's been given the pen, and Yeah, and he was part of, like, New Japan's revival into being, like, a really top entity. But right now it's just, he's grown long in the tooth, and I think it's about time that they try and switch things up. And I'm not saying he needs to go himself, like, entirely, but they need some fresh ideas and need some fresh faces thinking about how they drum interest back up in the product.
Now, I have a question, because I saw that the booker for All Japan is actually, I think he's ranked third in the Observer Newsletter Booker of the Year. And I wonder if it's time that maybe a Noah can rise up again, or even an All Japan can rise up again, you know, and kind of keep that spirit alive, but from a different Japanese promotion.
I mean, I'll say that other Japanese promotions are doing okay. I mean, none of them are doing, like, great right now, because there's just not a great... I'd say there's not a great interest in wrestling. There's just, like, attendances are down. The value of the yen makes things harder as well, because there's just economic problems in Japan right now, and so it means less people are likely to go out. But it's like anything else with New Japan being so dominant on top, in the same way that when WWE was dominant on top, even if their booking and their creative was in the absolute worst it's ever been, like in, I don't know, like 2019 was pretty awful, 2018, 2019, well, like just during or post, just slightly post the pandemic, when it was at its absolute worst, they were still the top name, and so no real challenger company could rise up to take on that mantle. And yeah, that's going to be the same way in New Japan. Like they're going to be, or they've been struggling creatively for about a year and a half, 2 years now. But eventually something will change and they will get hot again. We just don't know what that necessarily will be. But for the time being, it's just a real struggle to enjoy their product. Don't get me wrong, like things like last week when you see Zack Sabre Jr. versus Bryan Danielson and that 10-man tag team match, you like they still have great wrestlers that are going to be able to produce great matches. It's just the circus that surrounds it is not is making it less and make it harder to enjoy those fleeting moments.
Well, we talked about some of those Wrestling Observer Awards. Let's get into some of those that we've got on here. You can find them on the Wikipedia page or, yeah, elsewhere. Just Google it. Or the Observer itself, if you are subscribed to that. I haven't ran through the list yet in my mind.
Would you like to do some guesses then, maybe, if you haven't seen?
Yeah, sure. The only had seen was the Wrestler of the Year. That was the only one that I actually clicked on.
So Wrestler of the Year for, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, subscribers for 2023 was Will Ospreay, who came up on top of a top five of him, Cody Rhodes, MJF, Roman Reigns, and Bryan Danielson. So
that makes sense. I have my my bias of me being more of a WWE guy. Like Cody, to me, takes that spot in a different way, but Ospreay's had fucking amazing matches this past year, so it's like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like a good combination for Ospreay of having such high quality matches he's had throughout the year, and also being a drawing point for both New Japan and for like shows in the UK as well, and also being a contributor to the sellout at All In as well. So I think that he's a worthy winner, but it was pretty close in terms of votes between the top four at the very least. Number one, so had most outstanding wrestler. I think you can imagine who won that one.
Most outstanding wrestler.
So this is kind of like, because Wrestler of the Year is supposed to encompass both wrestling ability and drawing ability, whereas most outstanding wrestler is just focused on wrestling ability.
Just in ring stuff. So that's probably Ospreay again.
Yeah. So it's Ospreay followed by Danielson and Omega.
Yeah, Danielson would have been my guess.
Did they have an alternative that would be like, okay, that's just the drawing power?
Yeah, they have like box office draw, but I'm gonna I haven't found that one just yet, because it's
a little more toward the bottom.
Yeah, but I'll keep going down the list still. Tag team of the year.
I mean, they they tend to lean way more heavily towards like AEW and stuff. So I would assume almost every single one of the awards is not a WWE guy. So I'm probably going to say FTR.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, man, Tag Team of the Year.
You haven't seen either.
I haven't seen this one.
My guess is FTR.
I'm going to guess Kevin and Sammy.
Oh, you got one and two. So it was FTR that won that one, followed by Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Wasn't that much for that close in terms of votes for that one. Best on interviews, which is the best promo.
This one I know. I'm not gonna say.
I mean, I'm trying to remember like what we even had for exactly. Actually, let me bring up our or at least my end of the year awards list, because it's hard for me to remember like who's great and all that, because my gut would say probably MJF, but let me see who I had.
You'd be that I can say you would be very surprised.
So let's see. On mic work, I had in the mix LA Knight, Cody Rhodes, and all them. Christian Cage. Probably Christian Cage.
He finished third.
Third? Oh.
Yeah, behind Eddie Kingston, who won, and MJF in second.
Huh. Okay, well, I had Kingston and MJF in my mix for AEW.
Right. Promotion of the year.
That's got to be AEW.
World Wrestling Entertainment.
Really? They actually went with that. I'm surprised.
In terms of like first place votes, received 406 first place votes compared to AEW's 194.
Mm.
So World Wrestling Entertainment was significantly the winner of that one. New Japan finishing third place. Then we have best weekly TV show.
Probably Dynamite.
It's Dynamite, followed by The Collision and then SmackDown. Pro Wrestling Match of the Year.
I'm going to guess the Japanese Omega Osprey.
Omega Osprey Forbidden Door.
You got one and two again. It was the Tokyo Dome Wrestle Kingdom match that got the first place, and then the Forbidden Door one got second place, followed by MJF and Bryan Danielson Iron Man match, then Swerve Strickland Hangman Page at Full Gear, and then FTR versus the Bullet Club Gold from Collision in their 2 out of 3 falls match.
No love for Gunther, McIntyre, or Sheamus, or anything?
That was 10th. And that was the highest rated WWE match from the votes.
That I can believe.
So we have, I'm going to skip through the country or continent MVPs. Women's Wrestling MVP.
Tony Storm?
No, she was 6th.
Ripley.
It was Rhea Ripley,
Rhea Ripley. I'm hyper-focused on it being all AEW and New Japan.
Yeah. It was Rhea Ripley, followed by Julia, and then Athena. Yep, like Becky Lynch at 5th as well. Have a feud of the year?
Bloodline Cody? No, that wouldn't make sense. By BCC against someone?
No, Elite versus BCC was 6th.
I will say, is it Omega Osprey?
No, that was 4th. It was Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus the Bloodline.
So interesting.
Followed by Adam Page versus Swerve Strickland. Here's the one. Pro Wrestling Best Box Office Draw.
I mean, that should probably be Cody.
Second.
Really?
Yeah.
Roman?
It was Roman, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense then.
It was 1, 2, and 3. It was Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and John Cena.
I mean, he popped up for a quick minute, but at the same time made a big splash, so.
Most improved.
Well, that's tough. Is it an AEW guy or a WWE guy or somebody from TNA or something?
It's someone from AEW.
Most improved. Who did I have for improvement?
Man or woman?
Should I just give him the first name now?
So I had Eddie Kingston as the biggest upgrade, but we had a couple of really good options there. If you wanted to go with like Orange Cassidy, Swerve, the Guns, Julia Hart.
You went with Sky Blue, Rob.
Yeah.
I'll say Julia.
It's one of the names you mentioned. It is Julia Hart. Julia Hart was number one. Followed by Dominic Mysterio at two.
Nice.
Mariah May in three. We'll joint third with Sho Ryumino and then Swerve Strickland in fifth. You got Trick Williams in there as well. At seven.
Nice. He deserves that.
And Big Bill was there at eight as well.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I still don't feel it, but I get it.
Most charismatic?
Cody, I would hope.
Fifth.
Eddie Kingston?
Sixth. MJF won this one.
Okay.
Followed by Roman Reigns at second. The Bryan Danielson Award for Best Technical Wrestler.
I really hope it went to Bryan Danielson.
Bryan Danielson, probably. If not him, it's probably Zack Sabre Jr. or Will Ospreay.
It was Bryan Danielson followed by Zack Sabre Jr. this is how it ran. Bryan Danielson got 549 votes. Zack Sabre Jr. got 427 votes. And then third place, Josh Alexander got 17 votes.
Good for Josh Alexander.
The Bruiser Brody Memorial Award for Best Brawler.
The Breast Brawler is a different
story. The Breast Brawler. Yeah, that's Tony Storm.
That's out, you know.
Yeah.
Eddie Kingston.
Fourth.
Oh.
Moxley?
Moxley?
Yes, by a huge margin. It was John Moxley.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He's won it for... That's his fourth win in a row for that one. Best High-Flying Wrestler.
Vikingo?
Yes, by... he got 10 times the amount of votes of Will Ospreay in second place. Because Ospreay's not really considered that much of a flying wrestler anymore. This will be a fun one. Most overrated.
MJF.
Fifth.
Most overrated.
Mm.
It's most overrated from the Wrestling Observer crowd. So that's an important thing, because that's not going to be like Kenny Omega.
No.
I'd assume it's a WWE guy.
You'd be wrong.
Really? Mm-hmm. Most overrated. Who did I have for most overrated? I had most overrated with Jamie Hayter, which that's not going to be.
No.
CM Punk?
He was third.
Oh.
And he's a WWE guy, technically. So.
Oh, yeah.
It was Sonata.
Yeah. That makes sense then.
Roman Reigns was second. Tyrus was fourth. I'll run through the list of these ones, see if you kind of agree, because I think it's quite interesting. So you have, because we always do this underrated, overrated thing, and whether it's true or not. So Sonata, Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Tyrus, MJF, Austin Theory was sixth.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Nia Jax. Chris Jericho.
I would think Jericho should be a little higher than that.
LA Knight in ninth.
Yeah, I'd put him a little higher.
Don't you mean, yeah.
They have Jake Lee, who's an eight, All Japan guy. Oh, actually, I think he's Noah, actually, in 10. The Miz.
That's not fair.
Bianca Belair.
Wow. Okay.
Soraya was also on the list as well, in the kind of honorable mentions as well. Most underrated. WWE guy, this one.
Chad Gable.
You're right. Yes, it is Chad Gable.
Okay.
Chad Gable number one, Konosuke Takeshi number two, and then Daniel Garcia at number three. I won't do Rookie of the Year because you won't know most of these people, but guess some of the, if there's any like WWE or AEW guy that's on Rookie of the Year. The first person was Yuma Anzai, who's to be fair, I can't place that one particularly.
Rookie of the Year. Who do I have?
North Japan one.
And I have for newcomer in WWE. Where is my newcomer roster? I had Dragon Lee as the best. I don't know if they would classify him that.
No, because he's been wrestling for quite a while. Yeah.
So it's like newcomer to the whole wrestling scene?
Yeah, it has to be like, I think there's a, like, I don't, there isn't like a set thing, but they should only have been wrestling for like a year or two at most, really.
Kalani Jordan?
I got fifth place.
Nice.
So, yeah. Obafemi got sixth place.
Good, good.
Actually, Andretti was second.
What about Tiffany? Tiffany on there?
No, she's been around too long for that. But you had Billy Starks was in seventh, though.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Best non-wrestler?
Paul Heyman?
Second.
ZAW?
Yeah, he's at AW, yeah.
Callis?
Yeah, it's Don Callis, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, no, Paul Heyman's much better.
I would have gone with Prince Nana myself, but... But it was Prince Nana, then Renee Paquette and RJ City got fourth and fifth.
A bear,
Nick Aldis also got in joint fifth place with RJ City. Nigel McGuinness was there. Samantha Irvin was there.
That's rough because Nick Aldis was just wrestling for a lot of world titles earlier in the year.
Best TV announcer.
Yeah, Irvin.
Now, is that commentator or announcer?
Commentator.
Oh, Excalibur?
Yeah, I was going to say Excalibur.
Yeah, Excalibur was number one. Followed by Ian Riccoboni, Kevin Kelly, Nigel McGuinness, Chris Charlton, and then Michael Cole, Tony Schiavone, Taz, Jim Ross, and then a guy called Jay Church, who I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, that's a fucked up list now. Some of those need to be moved around.
Wade Barrett got an honorable mention. Worst television announcer?
Booker T.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, come on. No bread. No water.
Yeah.
Just
meat.
Yeah, top five for this one was Booker T, Kevin Patrick, Jim Ross, Michael Cole, and then Corey Graves.
Yeah, Graves and Cole on that list. Come on. But I could totally see Booker T getting that. Yeah. No champagne wishes and caviar dreams for those guys, though.
Yeah. Best pay-per-view.
Best pay-per-view.
Probably Forbidden Door or something.
Revolution.
Yeah, AEW Revolution. Followed by Forbidden Door, then All In, then WrestleMania Night 1, and then All Out.
I like how we've been able to get 1 and 2 a lot.
Mm. Worst pay-per-view?
What did I have for worst in WWE? Because it's probably the worst option.
There's a good chance it's that one, yeah.
Let's see, worst...
WWE WrestleMania Night 2 because Cody lost.
No, that was seventh. So,
one of the Saudi ones.
Crown Jewel.
Crown Jewel.
Yeah.
Followed by NWA Samhain, which I think is the one that
that's the cocaine paper. Yeah,
it's the cocaine one. Yeah, and then AEW World's End was third.
Yeah, I will say in my peaking, I did see that they were very much not fans of a very specific time in AEW.
I'll leave that one. I don't really care about the wrestling move one. That was just Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade, followed by Will Ospreay's Stormbreaker. Funny. Most disgusting promotional tactic. This is quite fun. I love these ones.
Is this when Vince came out?
Well, Vince did actually come out on TV.
Yeah, that wasn't last year. That was
the year before.
Oh. Yeah, that was the year before. Yeah. Well, you kind of got it right anyway. So the cocaine spot was third.
Ah. Wow.
But the for top one was WWE enabling.
What was that? Wow! Yeah.
I was scratching my nose. Sorry.
The top one was WWE enabling Vince McMahon and him being back in power / TKO using him to like as an announcement of how they were coming in and having him being like the creative vision in charge of it.
I don't think that's fair, but I understand. Like, not really a promotional tactic. It wasn't like they were like, hey, everybody, WWE, Vince is back.
Yeah, but they were talking about the second one was WWE's continued relationship with Saudi Arabia. And then you had things like the power slap thing.
Yeah.
And power slap. AEW signing Ric Flair.
Yeah, that definitely should be up there, yeah.
Yeah. They had the thing about the Juice Robinson using the roll of quarters after the Hamas terrorist attack stuff. WWE hiring CM Punk was on that list.
Mm-hmm. Really? That's ridiculous.
Let's see if there's anything else. Worst television show?
Probably Raw.
Nope. a second place for Raw.
NWA Power, maybe?
It was NWA Power followed by Raw, then NXT, then Power Slap, then AEW Rampage.
Not that I condone the Power Slap thing in the sense of, like, yeah, that's pretty fucking bad that these people can just get concussions. It's kind of fucking fun to just see the clips of that.
Worst match of the year.
Tyrus versus EC3, whatever that was.
That's second. Chloe's.
Was that an NWA thing or something that I wouldn't?
No, it's a WWE show match.
I see what I had for my worst. The worst match that I had of the year was.
It's probably on that list, or the one that you're about to name is on this list.
So I had a few that I don't think that they would put on there. I think that they would go with Miz and Shane at Mania.
That was third.
So the other ones that I had Shotzi versus Flair on SmackDown.
Isn't mentioned on this one.
Chelsea Green and Natalya on Raw, the Trick or Treat fight.
Yeah, it's not mentioned either.
And then I had the women's showcase from Mania.
What was my worst match? You had that on there?
No, I don't have that written down.
I believe it might have been Roman and Cody. Is it Roman and Cody?
No, that's not on there. Worst match of the year was Bray Wyatt versus LA Knight.
Oh, the Pitch Black thing.
Yeah.
Then other matches he had on there were Baron Corbin versus Gable Stevenson, Ronda Rousey versus Shayna Baszler from SummerSlam, followed then by Roman Reigns and Jey Uso from SummerSlam, Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho from Double or Nothing, Jeff Jarrett versus Jeff Hardy in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre match.
Realistically, that's probably the worst.
Julia Hart versus Abaddon from World's End.
Oh, yeah, that sucked.
And Adam Cole versus MJF from the main event of All In.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people hated that match.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't even think that.
They thought it was too bloodline. Like, too much of a storytelling thing. Actually, that actually quite leads into Worst Feud of the Year.
Cody versus Roman?
No, that's not even listed.
I thought you said his
bloodline. I actually know what it is.
Is it the MJF and Adam Cole thing?
MJF versus the Devil.
Yeah.
Followed by the Outcast versus the AEW Originals in second.
Fuck yeah, thank God. I hated that.
See, both worst feud to the year, both were AEW ones. Actually, there's a load of AEW ones on this one. You've got Keith Lee versus Swerve Strickland, Adam Cole versus Chris Jericho, Miro versus CJ Perry.
I do have to agree with Miro versus CJ Perry. Where is he, by the way?
He's going to be in that Meat Madness thing.
I hope so.
Yeah. Worst promotion of the year?
NWA.
Yeah, by a landslide.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Again, I'm the only member of wrestling media who watches this show. Yeah, it's not great, but they're trying.
Booker of the year?
T.
I mean, yes.
Triple H?
What does T stand for?
Paul Levesque. Triple H, yeah, obviously. But him ahead of Tony Khan in second. Promoter of the year. Different from Booker, is the person actually kind of like is the more of the running part of the company.
So that they probably would give Tony Khan then.
Nope. Nick Khan.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't think about the idea that he would be classified that.
Yeah, Nick Khan, then followed by Tony Khan, and then Dana White in third. Best gimmick.
Christian with the patriarchy thing?
Second. Close, though. You know,
Main Event Jey Uso?
No, you have it's Tony Storm. Bloodliner is in fourth. You don't have Main Event Jey Uso, it's just the Bloodline in general is fourth. Orange Cassidy was third.
Nice. I like Orange Cassidy.
You got like Dominic Mysterio in there, LA Knight's in there as well. Worst gimmick.
Yeah, there's so many really bad ones.
It's an AEW one.
Is it one of those ones that's like on like ROH or anything? Or no. Like a noteworthy enough name?
It's very noteworthy.
Maybe the Devil?
Yes, the Devil, yeah. is the Devil, followed by QTV, and then Tony Storm, who was, well, you won Best Gimmick, got third in Worst Gimmick as well. So,
you know, that's very fair, though. Like, we kind of had the same vibe with Tony.
Very polarizing. And, yeah, that's it out of the main ones, because the other two are, like, the best... they had the like the best wrestling book was Last Real World Champion. That's the Ric Flair book. And then best pro wrestling documentary was Dark Side of the Ring on Chris Candido and Tammy Lynn Sitch.
That made that legitimately made me emotional watching that. Like, I did see that there was the Voices of Wrestling documentary on Eddie Gilbert on that list. Mm. Did you happen to check that out, Gil? I know you. You check the Voices of Wrestling out.
I haven't seen that in particular. I might check it out now that it's been listed there. But yeah, it's not been immediately. You had in third place. You had that Cody Rhodes documentary that they did earlier this well, last year after him leaving AEW. So
totally should have ended with him and then that belt.
Yeah, but yeah, that's pretty much the Observer Awards. I think the Observer Awards is kind of like. It's obviously catering to their particular audience, so there is sometimes leaning more towards like the wrestling shows, but I think at least from a few awards there was a depiction of the fact that like they know that WWE is the hot hand right now.
It's very interesting to me that like they didn't give Tony Khan any of the awards or a lot of negativity towards the back half of AEW, and I gotta say I didn't dislike the Devil story as much. I do think it was too long in the tooth, but I also think that I haven't missed MJF at all. I gotta tell you, I just really haven't. And I think that this version of AEW is kind of more akin to what I was looking for from it. That's not to say I'm not an MJF fan, but I'm still just not missing what he brings. It's made the faction look stupid, though. The Undisputed Kingdom looks stupid. Because what are they really doing on TV?
Well, that's it for the Observer Awards then. So we can... What are we moving on to next?
I only have one more hot tag. That is...
And I presume that's it.
That is the thumbnail that people are looking at right now, if they're looking at the thumbnail. I don't know, maybe you're looking at something else, but the rumors and whatever that might end up actually panning out, it might not, could just be one of those things that we hear about and then it just dissipates, but potentially we might get Sylvester Stallone out there for WrestleMania.
Of course you're getting Stallone. He's gonna do the cold open.
That is perfect. And like I am looking forward to the idea of him being like, oh, it's time for you to finish the story, Cody. Like, you know, it's
kind of... Not how hard you hit, it's how hard you can get hit. Time to finish your story.
The Rocky franchise, I've said before, is it's a weird franchise to me because it's like I commend them for so much of what they did with that franchise. And at the same time, none of the movies by themselves are all that amazing in my mind. It is like one of the best franchises if you look at the full story. Because they do a damn good job. Better than most franchises, I would say. Better than almost, like, I'd put them on par with like one of the top three franchises as far as like being able to figure out a way to continue the story that makes sense. Because so many other things. Look at something like Star Wars. Not to brag on that all the time, but like they got a chance to do the sequel trilogy and they were like, let's redo the original three and in a shitty way that we don't plan ahead of time. The Rocky ones are always like, all right, well, let's do the next movie when we have the next logical progression of things. And yeah, like Rocky V sucks. It's not good. But you know what? That's kind of a decent story. And then like the Rocky Balboa thing, it's not all that amazing that it's like, all right, let's spend some time with him in the restaurant. And then he just fights some guy. I think his name's like Mason Dixon or something, but you know, the story itself is not all that bad. And like, I haven't seen Creed 3.
The guy's name really Mason Dixon.
I think it is. That's fantastic. Cause they named him off the Mason Dixon line. Let me double check to see that that is. Yeah, Mason the Lion Dixon.
Oh my god.
See, it's like, it's stupid as all hell, but it's fucking great at the same time. Now, I haven't seen Creed 3 yet. That's in my Plex chamber. It's just, you know, it's sitting there and I just haven't gotten around to it. But I've been a fan of all those things. So I would love to see Sly do something here for Mania. All the more reason why that would give me more of an idea of like, oh, can we please have Cody win this fucking championship? But it's cool. He's a bit of he's like one of the most lovable yutzes that it's out there. Stallone. Like, I've watched way more Stallone movies in the past year than I ever have in the rest of my life. And he's like an endearing jackass.
Like you?
Yeah, kind of. Maybe that's why I could see. It's like, he's a little bit of an asshole. He's a little bit of a prick. At the same time, you're like, I kind of love that little bastard.
So I do want to just touch on some TV stuff real quick, specifically Raw, because I want to talk about that main event and how I thought Jey Uso and Gunther had a great match. I am so tired of the Bloodline finishes. I saw WrestleTalk give Raw a 5 out of 5, and I just want to know, like, on what grounds? Like, what are we watching the same show? Like, why do people think that this Bloodline thing is amazing? It was good from November of 2022 through Mania of last year. Other than that, hasn't been great. I'm tired of it.
I didn't think that there was any chance that Jey was winning that belt.
I thought he had a shot, and then once they did the opening match where Drew and Cody ended with Bloodline interfering, I was like, oh, I know how Jey's losing.
To me, that was just a clear and obvious. Jey and Jimmy are going to have a non-title related feud. There's no reason for that to be the IC title match. I am curious, though, what they are going to do with Gunther, because now they set up a little thing of that with potentially Chad Gable. Potentially the idea that they're just going to throw Sami Zayn in there. And he's like, well, I guess I'll be a champion, even though I won that belt 3 times before. And yeah, it's kind of shitty. I think Sheamus had tweeted out something recently about, like, wow, I should do that match again. And I read up an article about it, Jack EWN, for the options for Gunther. But let's be honest, I don't think that it's looking all that great for Gunther right now for Mania.
I disagree. I think if the match is Sami Zayn, it's going to be great. I think they'll get a lot of energy out of it. And yeah, it's not the thing that we want for Sami, but people will act like they've never seen him win the IC title before. And to be fair, I'm not sure if he ever won in front of people or not, because that was very much during the pandemic.
He was the guy that was the champion before. It was him and then Ricochet and then Gunther.
Right, but so he did get a chance to win in front of people, is what you're saying.
Pretty sure.
That's good then. Yeah, I don't know. I think that would be a fun match, but Gunther's not fighting Lesnar.
It would be Sami Zayn's first time winning the Intercontinental Championship as a babyface.
Yeah, and people will treat that like it's a big deal. But I wanted to just say that, because I don't understand why people are like, oh, this stuff is so great. It's really not, and nobody, you know, I always get accused of being so optimistic about everything, but like, no, this stuff really isn't great. Like, it's boring, it's dull. I want them to move on.
Just wait till WrestleMania.
Well, that's all that I have down on my hot tags. Do you want to chime in about the Stallone thing or the Raw or any of that stuff, Cal?
Oh, well, with the Stallone thing, it's just a nice way to typify that Cody's coming back the second time to win it after losing it the first time or not getting the job done the first time. So I think that makes thematic sense, as well as it being in Philadelphia. The only other thing that I've just seen some tweets go out that WWE 2K24, after our discussion earlier about who was in the roster and who wasn't, had put out a teaser of who might be in the first DLC packs.
One of them, so Dragon Lee?
So the following people, in terms of they put out some like image with a lot of like paraphernalia in the background that are linked to particular like individuals. So based on that, people speculate the following names that are about to be announced as DLC, which are the Dudley Boys, Sandman, Carlito, Tori Wilson, Terry Funk, Kairi Sane, Nia Jax, Lyra Valkyria, Iron Sheik, Lex Luger, Jimmy Hart, Honky Tonk Man, DDP, and Jay Cargill.
So that would still be missing some pretty decent people on there, like the Dragon Lee, of course.
That's only the word of that.
And still no CM Punk at this point. So.
Yeah, CM Punk, Von Wagner, Naomi, still missing on there.
Hmm. So I'm sure those ones will come later down the road.
That's only the first portion of the actual tease that I think will have like a bunch of different things on there. But yeah, Lyra Valkyria, I figured that. Dudley's and Sandman and Funk and all that is interesting. That's probably going to be like an ECW-themed pack, which takes us back to One Night Stand. I think it's cool that they've got Jade in there so fast, but if they've got Jade in there so fast, I have to think that there's a good chance Punk is getting in this game.
Future DLC, probably, man. Maybe we get to see some Austin Creed action when it comes to the Stallone and Cody Rhodes story and all, but double checking now again. Yeah, I'm not seeing anything else to break down here, so I guess that is the hot tags for this week. Of course, as always, tell us what you think about all these things that we just talked about. Drop your thoughts in the comments below on YouTube if you're listening elsewhere on Spotify or Amazon Music or something like that. Either hop over to YouTube or tweet at us or post something on the Megamaniacs or the Discord or whatever you want to do. There's lots of different ways for you to talk about stuff within this bubble, but we do have, of course, some other things coming up with the Elimination Chamber, Perth, the whole post show kind of thing that we're doing in around, 12 hours plus at this point. Set up your email alerts for all that stuff. Double check that Darkcast that I mentioned before. I already mentioned the Discord and the everything is like along that front. Check out fanboysanonymous.com for everything happening over there. Check out the link tree, amangotree.com. You'll find links to the fanboy stuff, the Smart Guy Moment stuff, my Letterboxd, all that stuff all feeds into the same thing. So check me out at Tony Mango. Follow Robin Callum too.
Yep, check me out at Dude Fleece. Check out my work on Fightful. And stay tuned for anything else. And check out Callum as well.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at WiggleMaster14. Check out the Power Rankings, which will be going out slightly later on Saturday because I'm probably just going to wait until after Elimination Chamber to,
to post those.
So wait until it'll just be slightly later on, but you'll get to see it on Saturday regardless, after we will have talked about the show anyway. But you can also check out the Fantasy League over at www.fantasyleague.com or find it through Smart Count Moment, where our teams are all picking up points, and Elimination Chamber will be a big points gatherer for certain people because of the Elimination Chamber being worth more money. I wish it was worth money.
Yeah, if we had money on this, I'd be like, oh, let me pay more attention to my roster.
If we had money on this, I'd be crying.
Yeah, you'd be paying it because you lost. It'd be a case of worth more points because the Elimination Chamber is a gimmick match that we usually attribute more points to. But yeah, it would be interesting to see who's coming out of the Elimination Chamber, the front of the pack, because they'll be the front runner going into WrestleMania, our final show of the year, where we actually crown the winner. So stay tuned to all that and check it out after Elimination Chamber to see where we all stand.
One Night Stand.
Stay tuned to next year when I win.
We'll see.
That'll be the Cody Rhodes story. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning in for this episode. Of course, thank you for all of your likes and any kind of things you did to support us. And thank you in advance for checking out that post show coming up tomorrow afternoon. We'll see you then. Adios for now. This has been another Smart Count moment, and we are being counted out.